Hey guys, it's David. I wanted to let you know we had a little bit of problems while recording this week. We had both recordings fail at one point or another during this episode. So there is a couple minute gap in the episode, so I'm just kind of covering over the gap with a transporter sound effect to let you know that this is where it stopped recording, and then this is where the recording picks back up. I apologize for that, but the episode is mostly intact, and we do kind of cover some of the material twice, so stuff in that gap does get covered again later on in the episode. So I hope you enjoy. Oh, Shuttlecraft, where art thou? Thanks.
I found this in Gunner Room. Gunner Mirror at me.
What is it?
It's
sick for homeless.
In my gravity boots, I'm stuck walking the hole with a pounding in my skull. Ain't nobody knows which way the solar wind blows. Better than a man being blown.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Guy.
That's me.
Guy Davis.
Yep. And still here.
Still here.
After all these years.
And we've only had 1.5 years of Synthaholics, so that tells you how long.
How long I've been all these years-ing.
Yes, all these years-ing. Faith won't be able to join us today because she's having computer issues, so just wanted to throw that out there so you guys know why she's not here.
Yes, we miss her.
We do. As far as news goes, I mean, I know we kind of touched on this last week when I was with Bill, but, I mean, we've got that official word from Brian Fuller saying that the new series will focus on a woman. It will not focus on a captain. I think they also said there will be a female captain and a gay character and, you know, some things that were, like, you know, rumored to be, and then they've actually kind of happened. Or they've been confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought it was kind of strange, you know, I know I said this last week too, but that they said they're going to focus on not a captain. I'm like, well, technically, Kirk was the only captain they really focused on, because, I mean, in all the other series, there was, like, they kind of round-robined all the characters. Like, all the bridge crew got their own episodes, like, a couple times a season.
Yeah, it was like an ensemble.
Yeah, so, I'm just kind of confused that I said there, the captain's not the main character. I'm like, well, he hasn't been in, you know, 4 or 5 shows. I mean, I don't know why there's that distinction. Unless maybe she's not part of the bridge crew, and then I guess that could be part of it. But she's lieutenant commander, supposedly, so that's the same rank as Worf. So
yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, it depends on what you're centering the story on. I guess really my thought would be that this is not going to be centered around the bridge of the ship. So if you were to, like, for example, and by the way, we're not saying this happened, but if you were to center on Counselor Troy in TNG, it would open with her, you know, talking to somebody about their problems, and then you'd go through the story, and then it would close with her, you know, closing up her little psychiatrist room and, you know, putting a cover on the couch or whatever, you know what I mean? So, in other words, it would start and end more in her office than it would on the bridge of the starship every time.
Sure, sure.
And it would be the weird thing when it would open on the bridge, because then it would be, she'd be on the bridge and we'd have to be like, well, why is Counselor Troy on the bridge?
But
and
she
then
was be always this on the bridge.
Yeah. This story involves, you know, her being, her helping Picard get through this particularly difficult conflict with the Husniks, you know, and yeah. So it would be a different. I think that's what he's saying is that we're going to be starting out more or less in
lower decks.
In the lower decks, we'll start out in 10 forward. You know, the story is around Guinan, so we always open with Guinan talking to somebody at the bar. You know, instead of starting always on the bridge. So that's kind of my interpretation of how that's going to end up working.
You know? I mean, like, I just think it would be really weird if the whole show was focused around Lower Decks. And now
that's our background music right there.
Our background music, not provided by Warp 11.
Yes. That's the background music that's not provided by Warp 11.
Yeah. So, I could see it being, but I mean, just not knowing the captain or like the command crew at all would be very weird for a Star Trek show.
Well, and very different. But I could totally see that. I mean, that's something I could really get behind.
And it would
there's a lot of people who do, who make a starship go. There's a lot of people. So
can you make it go?
Uh huh.
We need
this
help
will be
to get
our
home.
Packlid. Yeah, Star Trek. Star Trek Packlid.
That would be an awesome show.
We look for things. Things to make us go.
Things to make us go. Can you help us go home? Oh, those are great guys. Only one episode. I thought there was more than one Packlid episode, but I'm pretty sure on my last rewatch, there was only one Packlid episode ever.
There's only one Packlid episode, but they're referred to two or three times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, I think you see him in a background on Deep Space Nine maybe a couple times. But I mean, like, I thought there was more than one episode focused around them for some reason. I don't know. But I was mistaken. But I mean, yep. it would be kind of cool on that one hand because I mean, you they've always focused on the bridge crew, and you never know what's happening anywhere else in the ship. So it would be kind of interesting to see what's going on elsewhere. But I'd also feel kind of sad if we never got to see the bridge.
Yeah, well, I think we would see the bridge just like we got to see Troy's Counselor Troy's little counseling room.
Yeah,
I mean, we did see that. We saw 10 forward a lot. It's just that the stories would be about 10 forward as opposed to being about the bridge.
But I think it would have to be about the bridge because it's supposed to be a short 13-episode story arc. So, I mean, like, unless the story is just contained within inside the ship and nothing happens outside the ship, but, I mean, that's still not Star Trek if it's nothing's happening outside the ship. You know what I mean?
Well, yes and no. So... And I'm not plugging my comic, but I'm plugging my comic. In Tamerlan, I have a crime scene investigation team that's part of the ship because they're kind of a police ship. So they, you know, they wander around and do that. If you were to have done Tamerlan as a TV show, you could theoretically center on Lieutenant Viejo, who's the CSI, and effectively do CSI in space. And the ship would just be there to take them from one place to the next so that the CSI team could then investigate the crime.
Well, that was like a long time rumor for like a Star Trek series. This was like before Renegades came out. I think it was just a fake rumor, but they were saying, oh, the next Star Trek series is going to be a CSI in space. I'm like,
Yeah, I mean, and I had thought about that once they had started that rumor of transferring Tamerlan over into that style. But, I mean, the reality is that that's a possibility, too, if you had... Or, Starfleet Battles, when they started doing their GURPS and D20 versions of it, that, you know, they had these... What were they called? They were called something... There was a specific thing that they were called, action teams or something like that. Which was if you didn't want to play the captain and the first officer, you could play these action teams. And the action team then would beam down and do stuff, and that would give your characters the ability to do that. So it was sort of the same thing.
And if Section 31 is true, that the ship's involved with Section 31, I mean, it could very well almost be CSI-esque if they're, maybe less CSI-esque and more spy.
Type. Yeah, be spy thriller.
So excited to learn more rumors about it, but I just wanted to bring that up with you since we hadn't gotten to talk with it it's been a couple weeks since we've gotten to talk, guy. So I wanted
it has. I've been away and
how was your vacation?
I would say it was Risa, but it wasn't Risa.
No Horgons and things like that.
no toxitots. Just lots of heat and sometimes cockroaches. Just not fun.
Oh, man. So someone turned off the perfect weather machine and brought the cockroaches in, huh?
Yeah. Stupid cockroaches.
All right. And what are we here to talk about today, guy?
So I started this whole thought process of Shuttlecraft, where art thou? When I was watching somebody talking about The Enemy Within. And, you know, the whole plot of The Enemy Within is, oh, goodness, we have to fix the transporter because otherwise Sulu will freeze to death on the planet. And the question always comes up, why didn't they just fly a shuttlecraft down there and save them? And, of course, you've got to come up with, you know, all these machinations and convolutions to come up with an idea of why the shuttlecraft couldn't do it.
They didn't have the budget to do it. The whole reason they invented transporters.
The reality is they didn't have the budget to do it. That's right.
That's the whole reason they invented transporters in the first place was because they
didn't want to have to be stuck.
Yeah, they didn't want to, like, they knew they wouldn't have the budget to show a spaceship go from the ship to the planet every single episode.
Exactly. So, you know, that's the whole thing that I kind of wanted to talk about was the history of the shuttlecraft. It was sort of, because it actually has a phenomenally interesting history. And it's really kind of cool and very intriguing. But you know, so I had actually done some research on this before a long time ago about this and recently kind of came up with this sort of story arc that ended up with the shuttlecraft. So we start with they weren't going to have shuttlecraft in the beginning. They were just going to have transporters. Okay. Well, there comes a time where that becomes an interesting and intriguing point. And they got the script for Galileo 7, which meant that they needed a shuttlecraft. And the story behind the shuttlecraft being built was they didn't have the space for all this, and so they had to make space for it, and they had to find a place for it, and there was all this stuff going on. And so they asked Matt Jeffries to design a shuttlecraft, and he did, and it was a beautiful thing. It was very sleek and rounded and kind of teardrop-shaped with these kind of gull wings that had warp nacelles on the end of the gull wings and landing gear, and it was just really pretty. And they showed it around, and they were like, yeah, that's too expensive. So they...
No, why'd they do that?
Yeah.
What you're describing sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was a beautiful design. This design, this like teardrop design, it looked...
Almost sort of reminds me of the Galaxy Quest shuttle.
Yeah, I think the Galaxy Quest shuttle might be an homage.
It's kind of teardrop-shaped.
It's kind of teardrop-shaped, yeah. So is their communicators. So there's this beautiful design, and they can't make it. But they're trying to figure out how they're going to deal with the Galileo 7 episode, and they still need a shuttlecraft for that. So what they ended up doing was teaming up with a model kit company. And I think it was AMT. I'm not 100% sure. But they teamed up with a model kit company. And I hate to say that I can't remember what it was, but this has been a while.
I feel like the AMT, the Star Trek model kits I had as a kid were AMT.
That's what I'm thinking, too. I just don't want to say that it wasn't Revell. But anyway, they teamed up with a model kit company. And the deal was the model kit company would front the money to build an actual practical if they had the rights to all of the Star Trek models. And that was the deal. But for simplicity's sake, their design was more like the boxy design that we've seen. You mm-hmm. know, this kind of square boxy thing that becomes the Type F shuttlecraft.
That's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
And it is. It's totally a TARDIS. Our boxy shuttlecraft is a TARDIS. It's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. And that is something that gives everybody who does fan films fits, because they have to, in order to design the shuttlecraft, they either follow the set that was built on the soundstage, or they follow the outside, which was built as a practical and shot on a different soundstage. And if they follow either one of those, the size is different. Either the shuttlecraft needs to be made bigger, or the set needs to be made smaller. But so that gave a big mess out of this one.
It's bigger on the inside, except for where the door is. Because, like, right. I feel like they have to kneel, like, bend their head to get out of the shuttlecraft. But on the side, on the outside of the prop, the door is way bigger.
Right. And if you look on the outside of the shuttlecraft, the door goes all the way up to the roof of the spacecraft. However, if you look at the set, you're right. They have to kneel. So it's another good foot and a half taller on the inside than it is on the outside.
It's taller on the outside, but it's longer on the inside.
No, it's taller on the inside and longer on the inside. So I think it's a little of both. I don't mean to, you know.
But the door, but they have to.
Yeah, the door. You're right. The door. Yeah, it's totally weird. So anyway, this is just the set was being built at the same time as the practical was being built, and they just, there was two different teams building these things, and so it became confusing. So that's an interesting story in and of itself, this whole long thing. But the thing that's really sad is that this Matt Jeffries design was so pretty, and then they just threw it aside.
It sounds like it was pretty.
Maybe. It was really interesting.
Maybe we'll get to see it in Star Trek Discovery.
Actually, you do see it in its own little way. And this is one of those cool stories. So later on, we get our Star Trek remastered, right? Mm-hmm. And Mike Okuda is one of the people who's working on the remasters. And we talk about this Type J starship that we hear about referred to in Way to Eden, and we hear about it referred to in Mud's Women, I think, is the one. Yeah, it's Mud's Women. And we hear about it referred to again when we talk about in the Menagerie, when we talk about what happened to
Pike
when he had his accident. It's this Type J starship. And that's just a name that they obviously threw out. Well, Mike Okuda had the opportunity to actually put together a practical for it, because they were the only time we actually see the Aurora in Way to Eden. It's a Tholian starship flipped around going the other direction with warp nacelles stuck on it from one of those model kits.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a ridiculous looking thing because it's clearly a Tholian starship going backwards with warp nacelles stuck to it.
Because that's how it goes backwards, because we put warp nacelles
on. We put warp nacelles in it, so naturally it goes backwards. And they lit it differently, obviously, but it looks obvious. So the remaster, they built this Type J starship. And what he did was he pretty much built the shuttle craft that was designed by Matt Jeffries as that model. It's not exactly the same, but it's very much an homage to the original design. He even said that himself. He said that, you know, he needed to build a starship, so he pulled the drawings of the Type J starship out, or I'm sorry, of the shuttlecraft out from Matt Jeffries to make that Type J starship.
That's fascinating. So
we do see it again in its own way in the remasters. So it was in California. Now it's on the East Coast again. And then they gave it to this company, and they started. I mean, they were a public project, and then they started running Indiegogos to restore the Galileo, and people were donating money, and everything like that. I think it may have been a Kickstarter. And they were donating money to it and everything like that, and they put it into this Boatwright company who builds boats. And the Boatwright company stripped it down to its skeleton and then rebuilt the skeleton, rebuilt the frame, rebuilt the entire, I mean, you know, using as many original parts as possible. And, I mean, the process was, of course, since it was an open project, we're seeing all of this stuff showing up. And it's so amazing to watch them build this, you know, because I'm watching this as it's going along, too. They're posting in the same forums. And they redid the lettering and everything, and they brought it up to this beautiful, beautiful redo. They rebuilt it beautifully. And then they donated it to the Johnson Space Center, where it lived up until about, I would say, I think it was last year, may have been the year before. And it lived there at the Johnson Space Center, and I visited it a number of times, you know. Mm-hmm. Because it was just sitting at the Johnson Space Center in their space exhibit. And it's gorgeous. The refurbishing is gorgeous. It's beautiful. And now it's been moved to the Intrepid Museum out there in New York.
Okay.
So it's near you.
Yay!
Yeah. So I went and visited it when it was in Houston. You get to visit it now that it's in New York and get your picture taken next to it.
How big is this guy?
It's a full-size shuttlecraft. It's a Type F shuttle. So it's the Type F shuttle.
Oh, I thought it was the filming model, you said.
No, this is the actual big, huge, epic, prop. Like the size of a car prop.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's been going through this entire process of sitting outside, deteriorating, and they finally fixed. That's why they sent it to a boat ride, though, because these people who build boats, they're already used to things about that size and restoring them and putting them back into shape and stuff like that. And they did a beautiful job. It's gorgeous. And so now it's at the Intrepid Museum in New York, where you can see it in their exhibit there, because they transferred it there. And it is a thing to behold. They put lights in the warp nacelles, which weren't there in the original model, but so the warp nacelles all change colors.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's beautiful. It's really, and the lights in the impulse grid in the back, so that they glow red. And I mean, it's just an incredible thing to see. But I think it's fascinating, this history of this particular model, which was a practical.
Yeah, it's incredible how it's been bouncing around. How long have you been following this?
Well, I got interested in it. I was on I can't remember whether it was Trek Corps or Trek BBS, but somebody was following it in the early part of the 21st century, so 2000, 2001, 2002. So I've been following its history for about 16 years, I guess, because, I mean, it's been about, 2000-ish, give or take, when I first found out that the Galileo still existed and was still out there somewhere. It's one of those things that it's been going. So I've been following it for, I'd say 15 years or so.
Wow, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And these guys did such a beautiful job. You need to go see it. Take your picture with it.
This is in New York City, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's in New York City. So it's a day trip or maybe a two-day trip for you. It's not like you can just hop on over there. You know.
I mean, it's like an all-day drive to get there from where I am in New York.
Oh, come on. New York's a small state.
I mean, compared to Texas, maybe, but...
Yeah, it is. or even Colorado, for that matter. I think Colorado's still bigger than New York.
Quite a bit. Maybe square mileage, because New York isn't a perfect square.
like Colorado is. And actually, Colorado is a rectangle, technically speaking, for those of you who are going to be pedantic about it.
Yes.
Colorado is technically a rectangle, just like Wyoming.
But all rectangles are squares.
Just warped. Warped squares.
Yeah, but it's not a rhombus, and it's not a parallelogram.
That's true. I wonder if you could have a rhombolelogram. Could you have a rhombolelogram? Would that be like a parallelogram that does the rhomba, dances some?
I don't know.
Could happen. It could happen.
It definitely could, maybe. If someone has devised a parallelorhombus, email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com, and we can show it to Guy and me.
I'd be curious. I'd love to see a parallelorhombus.
We can see what indeed this monstrosity would be.
I actually like saying parallelorhombus.
It's
or rhombolelogram.
Rhombolelogram.
Both of those work too.
They just roll off the tongue like they're meant to be.
They rhombolololo off the tongue. Anyway, so yeah, I'm just fascinated that the prop that you're going to see if you go to the Intrepid Museum, it really is the Galileo that existed on the soundstage back in Galileo 7 when
1966.
The goofy monsters tried to throw rocks at it
and spears.
And spears.
Styrofoam spears.
Styrofoam spears at Spock. but yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see. I mean, it's a great exhibit.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I still need to go down to, like, you know, the Smithsonian one day and, like, see the restored Enterprise.
Yes.
For goodness sakes.
I want to see the refurbished Enterprise. But yeah, the guys that did the refurbishing of the Galileo, it reminded me a lot of the Smithsonian refurbishing the Gray Lady, Because, I mean, it was the same kind of thing. They were trying to match the... Because the numbers had been worn off. So they were trying to, you know, they had to use what numbers were still there to kind of get an idea of what size the letters lettering was and everything like that so that they could re-stencil the numbers and the Galileo on the front that was scripted. You know, it was in script.
Oh, yeah.
So they had to work really hard to match all of that. And... You know, they're trying to restructure the whole thing so that it can be, you know, so it could be sound again. Because, of course, the practical had no internal stuff. There wasn't anything inside.
Yeah, it was just the, just for filming or when they're walking around the back of it when they crash land or whatever. So they can,
right.
Like,
the only thing
it,
you could do was climb into it and then climb out of it from the door. And they and like, you know, when they got it, the doors were on the floor inside along with a whole bunch of mouse droppings and bones. And, I mean, it was, like, really horrible when they finally got this thing. The condition it was in was just really horrible.
I'm sure.
So.
50 years of mostly neglect.
Yeah. It was really sad. And so I'm just really – I was very impressed by this – This repair and everything like that. And then nobody bought it. They donated it, I thought was just awesome.
That they spend all the money to pull all the money together to get it, and they raise more money to kickstart to fix it up, and then they donate it. That's really awesome.
Mm-hmm. It's just a really amazing thing. So that's the interesting story that goes behind behind the shuttlecraft.
That's really
that we love so much.
Yeah, yeah. I was definitely the lame in this episode because Guy had like, oh, I've got all this stuff. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I don't know any history. I don't know any of the history. I just had the Christmas ornament that talks, that Spock.
I have that one too. I love that one. Every year I bring it out and I play it, and my son's getting to the point now. Do you have to play that? Yes, it's required.
Yes. But I mean, as a kid, like we actually got two of them because my dad would buy them, and then people would buy them for my dad as gifts because they knew my dad liked Star Trek. And so, like, we'd, like, play him off, like, one word off, so it'd sound like it was, like, the Row, Row, Row Your Boat song. We didn't have three of them to set them off at least one word apart, but, you know, I tried with my two.
Yeah.
I love that. I love those, the Star Trek ornaments. They were great.
They really were. They were an astonishing thing. Okay, so I did actually find my folder, which is very useful. Because that's the important thing. Okay, so it was AMT, which was Aluminum Metal Toys, agreed to build the full-size set model through their subsidiary Speed and Custom Shop, which was located in Phoenix, Arizona, and headed by Gene Winfield, who actually was a guy who designed a couple of really interesting cars in that era. Hmm. So... They built it in exchange for getting the exclusive modeling rights for all of these different things.
Yeah.
But I think the part of that was that they had to give it up. So they had to give up the design for it to AMT. So that they could, you know, so that's why Jeffries' design didn't make it, was because of that. So they had 30 days to build it. So they built it in 30 days. That was another thing. It was very interesting.
Well, I mean, like, just given the way it looks, it sort of looks like they could have built it in 30 days. There's not a whole lot of detail in it.
Yeah, it's a wooden structure applied over a basic welded steel framework. And it has hard mahogany press board called Masonite that's covered ultimately with fiberglass.
Mm-hmm.
So,
probably the longest part is probably getting the fiberglass to cure.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, so, and there are like all kinds of weird things. Like the center landing gear strut at the end is constructed out of a surplus airplane landing gear.
That part always looked really cool to me. It's like this, it's got this weird backwards like landing gear on the back. I'm like, that's kind of interesting. Like,
it is. It's kind of neat. And the nacelles were steel tube assemblies. So anyway. That's kind of cool in that instance was that, you know, So anyway, I'm just rattling on about this stuff while I'm looking through the
looking through the almighty folder.
The notes, because I had taken all of these notes to do this.
So, like kind of going back to Enemy Within, there's no shuttlecraft because they were still negotiating this, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there had been no design to make the shuttlecraft at that point, so there was no. There had been no real plans to make the shuttlecraft, but then they decided they wanted to go on ahead and do that. So they made it for Galileo 7. But since Enemy Within predates Galileo 7,
yeah, it's like the third or fourth episode of TOS.
Yeah, so they didn't have that.
No. So. But I'm sure if they did have it, they could just say, like, oh, well, there's, like, the shuttlecraft gets interfered with some kind of something in the atmosphere, and it just wouldn't work. Because they do right. They do that all the time. It's like, you know, even if they had this other thing, it's like, well, it's not going to work either because of reasons. Because we have to make the drama strong here.
Right. Well, let's go on ahead and give you the now that I've got my notes going here. After it was canceled, Paramount donated the shuttle to the Braille Institute in Los Angeles, where it was used as a plaything for the young students. But because of safety concerns, they sold it to Roger Heisman in Palo Verde.
So they let blind kids play on...
They let blind kids play
on it. Play on a ship that probably had no Braille on it. It's like, what's this say? I don't know.
I know.
It's just like, oh, my fingers are cut off. I cut it on that round steel tube.
Round piece there, tube, yeah.
I'm pretty sure there's no words on this now.
So Mr. Heisman kept it in his front yard, and his neighbors thought it was an eyesore, and they petitioned to have it removed.
Well, to be fair, it's not the sleekest, sexiest-looking thing. I mean, if you're a Star Trek fan, it's definitely awesome. Got nostalgia to it, but like... If you're not a Star Trek fan, even if you are, I mean, I'm a huge Star Trek fan. I mean, we do this podcast together, but, like, it's not the prettiest looking ship. I mean, I'd be all for it. If I could have it, I'm like, that would be awesome, because it's a freaking shuttlecraft from Star Trek. But I'm like, do I like the way it looks? Not really.
Not really.
I mean, the
not exactly what I would call a lawn ornament.
I mean, like, the Star Trek V shuttlecraft was cool.
Yeah.
I liked the way that looks, and I like how they started using that in TNG after they, you know, had built it. Like, because the early TNG shuttlecrafts were awful. Those, yeah, like, itty-bitty rhombuses.
Parallelorhombus.
Maybe that's what a parallelorhombus is. Those shuttlecrafts from the early
Season
episodes.
Season 1 shuttlecraft is parallelorhombuses.
That, like, barely fit two people. Geordi and Data like to snuggle up on them because they were so small.
They were so small. Well, no, the little I don't know, shuttle pods, I kind of thought they were cool. I wouldn't have mind having that. But, you know. So anyway, after this happens, they petition to have it removed. And luckily, a guy named Stephen Haskins bought the shuttle from him and for $8,500. And he wanted to restore the Galileo. And in 1986, it was unveiled and displayed at the California Creation Convention, celebrating the 20th anniversary of Star Trek.
$8,500? That's a lot of money.
I know, especially if we're talking about the, like, 70s and 80s, you know.
And that's like, it's easily, like, probably, like, $10,000-$15,000 in our money, at least?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like...
You know, at least... I don't know. I don't know exactly how, you know, the exact inflation numbers on them, but that's a lot.
It's
going to
be a lot of money.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah, it is. So when they weren't on display, though, the Galileo was stored in the open, uncovered, and exposed to the elements. And so she was restored twice more, but ultimately left to just fall apart. And at some point, it was even filled with sand.
What? So it's like,
yeah, and she was
we're
like,
repurposing it as a sandbox now for the not as blind children,
and then she ended up being stored amongst old RVs and buses in California.
I can see that. It's like, man, how much that RV with no wheels?
Yeah, can I have that RV with no wheels?
I bet it flies.
It's like totally the Spaceballs ship. Stuck with the Spaceballs ship now.
Oh man.
Oh, man. So, anyway, so she gets restored again, right? In 1989, the Galileo was purchased by Lynn Miller in Ohio for about $3,000. And she was going to play, she was going to restore the shuttle again. And then display it at the Air and Space Museum next to the Enterprise, right?
That would be cool.
Yeah, it would be.
Except for the shuttle would be so much bigger than the Enterprise.
It would be. It would be so huge.
It's like, how did that fit in there? Mama, didn't the big one go into small?
And by then, it'd be like, it'd be still in the gift shop downstairs at that point in 89.
Yeah.
And she got it for like $3,000. So the price is going down.
Down.
It's like, this isn't helping any.
Even with inflation, it wasn't as much as the first cost, I'm sure.
Yep. And this is, of course, in 89. This is before we had Kickstarter or anything like that. So she raised money through her Starship and conventions and stuff like that by selling T-shirts and stuff like that to gain money to refurbish it. But then, you know, then it, you know, she couldn't, there was the team kind of fell out in 93. There was a team of people trying to restore it, and they had a falling out in 93. And it was, the model was being stored at the Akron Airport as the hangar, and the hangar property was ultimately sold, and the hangar was demolished. And so after that, nobody knew what happened to the ship. But then, all of a sudden, and I guess it's actually later on, because this is where I lost track of it, too, was there, right? That's mm-hmm. the last time I saw it was when it was stored, you know, stored in a... Well, somebody found it in a scrapyard on Google at that point in time, which I thought was fascinating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those early Google Earth images were impressive, but not, like, amazing.
Not that impressive, yeah. So
it's like, oh, it's the world, but it's like, oh, what's the world at, like, you know, like 460 by 800 resolution?
Yeah, so that's right. So they moved it to a sandblasting company in Akron, Ohio. And she wanted to finish it, but it became clear that there was no way that, or that you know, they parked it at this place, and then they found out that the owner kind of the sandblasting company figured she wasn't coming back, and they never heard from her again, and they couldn't reach her anymore. And so the Galileo is just parked in the sandblasting company. And the owner walked away. So it sat in a storage yard for 5 years. And then finally, somebody found it who suggested it needed to be rescued.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to get it moved, and then it disappeared. And so it's like really weird. So at this point in time...
This needs to be like a documentary movie.
I know! I was thinking the same thing. This is like long story to this. Because Doug Drexler gets involved at some point in time here. Because he's been... You know, at this point in time, Doug Drexler has his blog, Drex Files.
Ooh.
And he starts following this and starts posting information. So finally, this group of people... who had the original model in the 80s, they finally track them down, and it turns out the Galileo belonged to Lynn Miller, the lady from before.
Mm-hmm.
They finally managed, or they managed to track her down, but they couldn't get a hold of her. And once this team, once she kind of caught wind that the team was looking for the shuttlecraft, she puts it up on eBay to be sold. So, you know, they're kind of aggravated because they would have loved to have bought it from her outright instead of having to compete to get this thing. So
she was just trying to make a buck.
She was, I mean, it's entirely plausible that that's the... Yeah, that's the. I don't want to cast disparagement on her. I mean, sure, you know, sure. We don't know anything about what her situation was.
Gotcha.
You know,
I'm just saying, like, they were trying to get a hold of her, and it's like, oh.
Yeah, but that could have been anything. That, you know, that could have been the
miscommunication.
Yeah, it could have been a miscommunication or whatever,
or lack of.
Right. So anyway, this new group buys it, and then they on the. From the they buy it from her off eBay or whatever, however that worked. It was purchased for $61,000 Wow. So we've gone from 3,000 to 61,000.
So no, we went from 1,800.
Yeah.
To what, 6,000?
Yeah. To 3,000.
To 3,000 to what?
61,000.
Good grief.
Yeah.
That's like,
and it was,
this thing just keeps changing hands.
So here's the group that bought it. Get this. It was Alec Peters. of Axanar fame. So
don't you mean infamy? No.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, but it is still kind of cool. So they then bought it, and then they gave it to the Master Shipwrights in New Jersey. And they raised $100,000 to get it back to its original state. And they did it. They managed to bring it back up to its you know, its original form, and it is beautiful.
And better than its original form, because you said it's got the lights in it and all that stuff now.
Right. Right. And so this is now 2012. So they're now finally getting it into its place to be fixed and updated. And their decision to use the Master Shipwrights was because, one, it was decided a boat restorer was the perfect entity to restore the Galileo, because the Galileo was built by Gene Winfield in the 1960s of wood and metal frame.
And fiberglass, so makes a lot of sense.
And it was a boat builder that has expertise in working in those materials. So that's why they chose that, was because it was pretty much effectively a boat wright that built the first thing. So, sure. You know, kind of thing like that. So that's how that came about. So in 2012, they sent it off to the Master Shipwrights, who fully restored it, and it is gorgeous. And then they donated it to Johnson Space Center, who displayed it for, I want to say, 3 years. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's about, like, that makes about, no, maybe 2 years. Because I only went and saw it twice.
Sure.
And I go down there once a year. So, you know, you've got kind of these, yeah, that's right. So it was 2 years, and then it was on to where it is now, which is the Intrepid. So there you go. That's my revised version of the story by reading my notes, which were all taken from the various websites that I mean, all of my notes were taken from various people who had posted various things on various websites. I do not own the rights to any of those things. I'm just pretty much regurgitating. But I was there while they were doing all of these things. So I was kind of, I mean, I'm not the owner of it, but I was present in all of the forums that were these things were being posted in. And I was following the restoration the entire time.
That's really super interesting. I mean, this is a lot different than a normal episode that we normally do. You're just giving me a huge history dump, and it's amazing. Like, I didn't know any of this stuff. And like I said, this would be a fantastic documentary. Maybe once Larry's done with Con of Wrath, maybe we can pitch this to Larry.
There you go, because I think Larry might have been involved in a lot of this. It seems like I don't remember Larry necessarily being involved, and I don't want to speak for Larry, obviously.
Sure.
But yeah, it seems like he was somehow involved in it, or maybe he wasn't.
I'm sure he would have to at least like been on the forums or something or
something.
Like somehow,
Drexler was involved
because so. Larry. I mean, like he just seems like he knows all this stuff and gets involved in this stuff at least a little bit because of his passion for Star Trek. So we're trying to have him and Bonnie Moss on in a couple months, whenever all our schedules line up.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can ask him then if we remember.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, because it is a fascinating thing. And I've got the Jeffries pictures. I will give them to you.
Well, that's great.
You can put them in the...
Put them in the photo, of the cover photo.
Photo montage.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Which we'll use. Oh, that's right. Winfield worked with Thomas Kellogg, who was the guy who designed the Avanti Coupe, which is a very unique-looking car. It's a very, very unique design. You definitely spot it and go, oh, yeah, definitely. So that was part of the team that worked on designing the Type F shuttlecraft. And if you look at the Avanti Coupe, you definitely can see the Type F shuttlecraft is in the same vein. You know what I mean? it's boxy like the Avanti is and stuff like that. So you can definitely...
I'm trying to look it up right now. Yes, that is very...
Yeah, it's very got a very... Boxy. You can see it. It definitely sort of has the same general feel.
It looks like a car that should be in the movie Cars.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Where it's like... The lights are, like, you know, not on the edge of the car. They're, like, on the... They're, like, moved in a little bit. Like their eyeball. Like, it's so weird. That is a bizarre ship.
Yeah, really wild and strange design.
Yeah, I'll have to put a picture...
I mean, especially for the cars of that era.
I'll have to put a picture of this, too, like, on the cover.
Yeah.
You'll be like, what is this? If they even look at the cover, I don't know.
So there you go. That's the history of the Galileo.
The history?
And, of course, there's the in-story history, which is the, you know, we don't know why they didn't have a shuttlecraft for the enemy within. There's your answer. And then there's the
actual story. Answer. We didn't want to build it until we had.
Yeah, well, they didn't have the money until they didn't.
Until they basically had to negotiate to get it built. So
they didn't have the money. So that's why they had to negotiate with AMT to do this. Was because they didn't. There was no way. There was no budget for it. And so they needed two things in order to do a shuttlecraft. One, they needed a script that justified it, which is where we got our Galileo 7 script.
Mm-hmm.
And two, they needed somebody to foot the bill. And so there was no way to get that until they got to that spot.
And just kind of speaking of models, I really, really want like a model company to put out models for the JJ-verse. Like, I want to, like, there's basically been three different Enterprises. I know there's been three movies, but there's the one in 2009, and then it got, you know, wrecked a little bit by the black hole, so they refit it a little bit for Into Darkness. And then I think it got wrecked a little bit in Into Darkness, and then they kind of refit it a little bit for the beginning of Star Trek Beyond. They get destroyed in Star Trek Beyond, and then we get the Enterprise A. So there's technically been, like, four different versions of, like, the Enterprise from the JJ-verse.
Yeah.
I would love to have, like, a model kit for each of them, especially the Enterprise A, because it looks so different. With its giant nacelle struts and much thicker neck.
Yeah, I would love. And then I would love the Franklin.
I'd like the Franklin, too. I would also... I mean, the Narada is not really a feasible, practical thing. Maybe the Klingon...
There'd be way too many little pointy parts.
Maybe the Klingon ship or, you know, the Mud ship. I just really hope they, like, actually feature Klingons in the next couple films so we could get some, you know, some nice Klingon model kits for JJ's universe.
Yeah.
Because I love Star Trek model kits. I think, I don't know, did I send you the pictures? Like, my mom sent me some pictures of, like, myself, like, building model kits when I was a kid with my dad.
Yeah, I keep going down to the hobby shop and just picking up model kits of various things. And they're all downstairs in the basement, and I will get around to building them someday.
I finally
got the one that I had always wanted.
Which
one? The one that I had always wanted was the bridge. And I never got it when I was a kid, and it took me forever, and I finally got it, and now they've made a newer version that's even better, and I'm like, well, damn it, because...
Well, like, the model kits, but they haven't made any for the new movies, right? They're all the older TV shows and movies.
Yeah,
movies.
They're all yeah, exactly.
Like Prime, they're all Prime Universe models.
Right.
I want to say I saw online somewhere that some other company got the license for the Kelvin timeline model, so I really, really hope they come out soon. I'd really like to pick some of those up. I like them a lot.
I agree. It took me some time. The new JJ or the Kelvin verse. We should probably call it by its real name. The Kelvin verse. Enterprise. The Kelvin verse Enterprise felt. It took me some time to grow fond of that one, but it took me a long time to get fond of the Enterprise D. So, regardless. You know, it took me a lot longer to get adjusted to the Enterprise D than it did to get adjusted to the Kelvinverse Enterprise.
Well, the Kelvinverse Enterprise, I mean, it's like they took the old model and then they realized there was a photon torpedo launcher on the neck, and so they just, you know, didn't want to have the torpedoes and phasers shooting out the same round dish on the bottom of the saucer section. So they kept. They got the original Enterprise, and they're like, well, we know the torpedoes are where they're supposed to be, so we're going to take the Enterprise, you know, from the motion picture, and we're going to bind them, and then we're going to, like, make it have sex with a race car, and then this is the new Enterprise. Because it's very, like, race car-esque, like, more slightly more sleek, more curves, giant engine, you know, the nacelles for the engines, you know, so. I mean, I think it's very faithful to the, you know, original basic shape. I mean, it's oblate, you know, it's stretched and, you know, squeezed in different places, but I think, I really like, I mean, it definitely looks like the Enterprise. If you look at them side by side, they're very different, but it's still recognizable. Oh, that's the Enterprise. I think they did a good job in that respect.
Yeah, I agree.
But the Enterprise A, you barely get a good look at it in the movie. And like, I saw a still picture of it on Facebook, where like the base of the nacelles are just huge, like four times longer than they were like on the one at the beginning of Beyond. And I was like, really? And the movie, the camera's in such a way where you kind of don't get a good look at how the nacelles are, but they are really wide now.
Right.
And I'm like, that's kind of cool. Like, it's almost like the Enterprise D, because Enterprise D's got pretty wide nacelle holders. Struts, whatever.
Such amazing nacelles.
She's got huge tracks of nacelles.
Yes.
If you pardon the engineering pun.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, there you go. That's the history lesson on the Galileo.
The Galileo. We hope you enjoyed that. I enjoyed it, because I didn't know really any of this. I'm as layman as hopefully many of you are listening. Not in a bad way, but just like, wow, that's really interesting kind of way.
Yeah, I kind of apologize for the having to tell the story, then finding my documentation and having to tell the story again.
Well, it works, and we hope you enjoyed it. And, you know, a guy kind of took over. He's been gone for a while. He's just like, I've got to get my voice heard.
Yeah. I have to speak out about shuttlecraft.
Shuttlecrafts.
It's important.
It's important to know our history, our Star Trek history, especially going into the new series that'll be coming out in just a few months.
Yeah, it's also interesting how... my feeling is so interesting how poorly treated these props were by the studio, you know?
Yeah.
Just tossed out, thrown away.
Yeah, I mean...
And what's even more astonishing is that the props for, like, Enterprise were tossed out and thrown away. The props for Voyager were... you'd think by the time we got to Enterprise, they would auction the parts off right away.
And sure.
And recoup thousands of billions of dollars.
Especially after the letter-writing campaign and all the people, you know, wanting that fifth season, you know, who are like, oh, please do a fifth season. They're standing out in front of the lot. Like, I just don't understand why they just throw this stuff away when... Thousands and thousands.
My thought is, somebody out there ought to just go to these things on closing day and say, look, we have two large trucks. We'll throw everything in the large trucks that you don't want for free. We'll haul it away if you'll just let us sell it. You know?
Yeah.
Because that would be totally what I would do. I'd stand there and say, look, I will take it. But there's some kind of rule that they can't do that. I don't know what it is, because I've keep thinking this every time. And my mom used to be a producer, and I remember her saying something about that. You know, well, they have to throw it in the dumpster for insurance purposes or something really weird.
For insurance purposes.
It's like got to go to the dumpster and be destroyed. Like, you know, it's like...
I heard they wanted to, like, you know, tendentially, like, you know, preserve the Deep Space Nine set for the space station, because it's, like, one of the most biggest, the most impressive sets they'd ever built. But there just wasn't enough money to, like, just preserve the set, keep it where it was, because it was so, so huge. I just can't imagine, like, I mean, I really wish I could have, like, you know, been in California while that was shooting and, like, been able to, like, take a tour of the set, because it just seems like... so amazing. Like, it just... it looks like there's a lot to it. There probably isn't as much to it as you think there is.
Yeah.
It's still... by all accounts, I've heard about the Deep Space Nine set. It was absolutely enormous.
Yeah. I agree.
Very interesting history.
Yep, there you go. That's the history. So...
And I just wanted to go ahead and talk about how our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us online at Synthaholic Duo. You can find me specifically online at David_J_Duncan. You can find Aaron at Blackbird2004, Faith at Faith Hertzberg. And where do we find you, Guy?
You can find me at USS Tamerlan or at GS Davis Art. You can also find that on Facebook, and I'm trying to brand everything as GS Davis Art.
Fantastic. Yeah, you can find us on Facebook. We've got a regular Synthaholics page. We have the Synthaholics group. Please join it and join in all the fun, talk, post memes, whatever you want. We're a fun Star Trek-centric Facebook page. Please rate and review us. We've got we're on iTunes. That'll help us be seen so we can get hopefully more listeners and get more people into the show, because it's always fun to grow the Star Trek family as such it is. And we also have Patreons. If you want to throw some money our way, support the show, we'd greatly appreciate it. We have different perks. You can find the Synthaholics show at patreon.com/Synthaholics, and if you want to support the guy and his art with USS Tamerlan and upcoming Witches of Flame, that's patreon.com/DSDavisArt. And I think that wraps up our closing notes. Thank you so much all for listening. Live long and prosper. I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend.